This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Feeding Time. My name is Ofnithing. I'm usually behind the scenes as the producer for Feeding Time, but I'll be filling in for Feku this week. So today on the show with us, a person who's no stranger to our show, Wong Yin Hao, and he's here today to talk to us about his two new babies, Flint and Proof.
In F&B, it's obviously a very fast-paced world, and having been in the business for more than 10 years, that qualifies me for, I suppose, what do you call it, middle-age status. So I felt it's good to actually sort of have a reboot, in a way. It's sort of challenging myself away rather than just sticking in the staying in the comfort zone.
But first up, here's what I've been eating around town this week. Kajang is a place that's famous for two things: the K-Town Clan, local hip-hop group that raps Kajang with pride, and of course, Kajang Satay. Now, I'm no Fei Ku, so the only satay I'm familiar with is the one from Syed in Lucky Garden Bangsa, which I think is pretty good compared to the other satay options available in the Klang Valley. But I decided to drive down to Kajang, braving through the rush hour jam, in a journey that only took me 1 hour and 20 minutes, to try out the whole Kajang satay experience for myself. From what I understand, Haji Samuri is one of the more popular and established satay joints in Kajang, opening way back in 1917. But I was brought to a place called Nyok Lan Kajang Satay at Restaurant Malaysia, which is right down the road from Haji Samuri. And according to my Kajangite tour guide for the day, this is where the locals go to. Now, Nyok Lan Kajang Satay is a Chinese-owned stall that operates in the Malay-owned Restaurant Malaysia. I wanted to talk to the workers, but they were all busy as the restaurant was full. But looking at the t-shirts worn by the workers there, I understand that they've been churning out satays there since 1971. And here they serve the usuals of chicken, beef and lamb, with the addition of fish satay. The fish satay was a really interesting one, as I've never had it before. Apparently they use catfish fillets, and when it arrived, it looked like it had kind of a fried texture. So in my mind, I was expecting a crunchy texture, forgetting that it was grilled like a satay over charcoal. But once I took a bite, it was the exact opposite. The meat was extremely soft, almost like a texture that melts in your mouth, and yet solid enough to stay on the satay sticks. The marination for the fish satay was on point. You know, you get that same hints of spices that you get from your chicken satay, but with a different meat. I ordered 10 more sticks of fish satay after that. Moving on to the chicken, comparing it to satays that I'm used to, you know, there's always some fat or skin that goes along with the meat, but this one was pure meat chunks with no fat or skin in sight. Same goes with the beef and lamb. I guess they don't skimp on their satay meat in Kajang. Now, I don't know about others, but there are times where I've eaten satay and I get mixed up between which is the lamb and which is the beef. My taste buds are fairly normal, I guess, but too often it seems like the marination overpowers the meat, making it hard for me to really tell the two apart. But here you get a strong beefy taste with a marination that doesn't seem overpowering for the beef, and same goes for the lamb. You know, with meats like this, both meats tend to be chewy when it comes to the texture in other places, but in this place, both meats were soft, juicy, and packed with flavor. Meats like the beef and lamb do get stiff the longer you leave it on the table, so it's best to order in small portions so that you eat it fresh off the grill instead of ordering your satays in large numbers and ending up with cold and chewy satays. You can find Nyok Lan Kajang Satay inside Restaurant Malaysia that's located at 31 Jalan Semenih, Kajang, Selangor, and they are open from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. except for Tuesdays.
With me, Yin Hao from Stoked, Flint, and now Proof as well. The list is starting to really expand when it comes to, you know, adding on names of restaurants after your name. Let's first talk about Flint. It seems to be the natural successor to your whole ideology of cooking with the oven and the smoked meats that you first initiated with Stoked, and that was a huge success in Jalan Kasar. So what made you decide to open another, well, ostensibly similarly themed restaurant?
Well, there's one obvious difference between the two outlets. Flint is pork-free, so that's obviously catering to a different audience, a larger audience, so to say. And it fits in with the demographics and the clientele that we've seen in Ampang, where Flint is located. So there was obviously one driving force behind it. Besides that, I think it's also because I have different chefs for Stoke and Flint, different head chefs for Stoke and Flint. And the chef of Flint has specializes more in more soul, I would call it soul food, more braised items. But besides that, obviously, she's really into, she is a she, and she's really into her steaks. Another major difference in the philosophy is that the steaks in Flint are wet-aged for a longer time. In fact, they are wet-aged, whereas the steaks in Stoke aren't. So there's actually quite a underlying difference in the philosophies between the two chefs in the two outlets.
So I guess for the purpose of easy definition, Flint is a little bit more on the comfort level, where it's food that tends to be like more stews, more food that you look to when you know it's rainy like today.
Yes.
Or, you know, you need a bit of a pick-me-up and you don't want something that's too, not to say sophisticated, but you know,
yes,
a bit more
absolutely.
Genteel.
You got it spot on.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in that sense, I guess it caters very, very, very perfectly for families.
Absolutely. There's something quite unique about Flint is that we actually created a sort of play area upstairs. And I've noticed a bit of a gap in the market in terms of sometimes you want to go for a good meal. And you, as a parent with young children, it's hard to find a place which is conducive where the kids can sort of have a bit of a run around, and the parents can have a good, you know, bottle of wine and some food along with it. So that's unique to Flint as well. So we've got this, you know, nice generous play area upstairs.
We've taken a leaf from McDonald's book.
Our
not a leaf from the food book. Let's just be hasty to add, but you know, a leaf in terms of keeping the kids occupied, and you know, the adults can play a little too.
Absolutely.
Now you mentioned the primary difference between the meats, Flint and Stoked, being dry aged and wet aged.
Yes, correct. Well, we don't quite dry age our meats in Stoked. We just don't age it very long. Just more for the freshness, but for wet aging, obviously, we just create a bit more savory flavors. You know, so
okay, for the sake of our listeners, why don't we run over the whole dry aged, wet aged methodologies, and I think the benefits of each.
Yes, well, dry aging, it's essentially just dry aging is what it is. You lose a lot of water as you age it. So the flavors are more, I would say, it's more pronounced in terms of the more slightly more funky flavors. And I find in Malaysia, when we don't really obviously have the weather or the climate for dry aging, you can obviously build a cold room and you can wet age it. I feel that it's probably more conducive for wet aging because everything is sealed in a vacuum bag, and it just takes a bit longer. It takes a couple of weeks for the more complex flavors, the savory flavors, to develop. And so that's really one of the main underlying factors, is practicality.
Right. You mean you don't have your own Himalayan salt slab lined room? Come on.
Haven't
Come
quite.
On, Yin-Hao. Seriously, not yet.
Perhaps for our next project.
Yeah. I've seen one at Victor Churchill, obviously,
yes,
in Sydney.
Yes,
oh,
I've been there.
What a thing of beauty.
The one at Woollahra, right?
With
yes.
the rotating, you
Amazing,
know, oh my
yeah.
God. It's
That's
like
a wonderful, wonderful place. Yeah.
A thing to behold.
It's a dream.
So in terms of wet aging, you like you said, you vacuum pack it in a bag.
Yes.
Do you do anything with it apart from...
Yes, besides that, we marinate it with olive oil. We add in herbs as well. So there's a little bit more flavouring that goes into it as well. So you get a slightly different profile of flavours.
You're essentially pushing in flavours. You're pushing in flavours and you're really just jam-packing it in with oxygen so that it has no choice but to go into the meat.
Exactly.
Whereas with a dry ageing process, it pulls out all the moisture.
Yes.
And gets it down to its purest, most essential state
exactly.
before you then pump it full of other things again and
exactly.
when you cook.
So it's a much more meaty, sort of, I would say, almost gamey flavour when you dry age it.
And then, you know, there's this whole, oh God, the grass-fed, grain-fed, half-grass, half-grain corn, you know.
Yes.
What do you make of this whole debate? I mean, is there a real thread of sense to this, or is it just a lot of it is marketing hype?
No, I think there is a clear difference in taste and as well as texture of grass-fed and grain-fed meats. We sell a bit of both, so really it's different strokes for different folks. You know, we cater to both markets.
So a grass-fed piece of meat would yield a flavour that's...
It's a little bit more, I would say it's more... For me, it's actually a bit more intense, but it can be a little bit more chewy. That's the texture, that's the difference. For me, it's more textural when it's grass-fed or grain-fed. So grass-fed for me is just a bit more chewy, but it has a bit more of this essence of beef that you look for. I mean, a lot of the top age steaks in Europe are all grass-fed.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I lean slightly towards that, but it's really just different...
Matter of
yes,
taste,
personal
isn't it?
Preference, yes.
At the end of the day.
Yes.
Now, you're obviously not just a beef connoisseur at Flint.
Yes.
What other things do you serve there that probably you're not going to expect to see it stoked.
Yes.
But are just as meritorious.
Well, probably one of our, in fact, our signature dish there is a smoked beef. So that's done in a slightly more American way. So it's almost six hours of slow roasting. And we use a Wagyu brisket as our base. And then from there, it goes through 4 hours of smoking in the Bertha. And then finish it off in a normal oven for another 2 hours, again at a fairly low temperature, just to make sure you get the sort of fall off the bone, very tender,
charred on
melting,
the outside.
And of course, because it's Wagyu, so even though it's Wagyu brisket, there's still a good layer of fat which really does melt in your mouth when you have it. So that's become a Flint signature.
I suddenly have this hankering for a piece of steak. You're terrible. Now, you obviously were very deliberate in terms of your demographic. You moved to a place where there was a lot more family-oriented to suit the theme that you had. But there's also a very, hunting lodge kind of appeal to it. That whole meaty gaminess, unabashedly so.
Yes.
And that's obviously been a very deliberate part of the whole planning as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So from the start, it was always the brief to the IDs to have something more of a hunting lodge feel. And our private room upstairs, that really has got a fireplace. You feel as though you're overseas. That's the whole point.
There's not a functioning fire, surely.
I did think of burning something there, but I was told not to.
Yeah, there's taking veracity only so far, right? Now, you mentioned some of the items that you've got there. What are some of the other things that you can expect to find at Flint that are pretty noteworthy that are not on Stoked?
Our braised items are also very popular. So we've got a braised lamb shoulder. And we've also got a braised chicken, which is obviously done cooked over a slow fire. So I think, in fact, what's unique about Flint is that we could essentially almost be, in fact, we probably are part of the slow food movement. I don't think it's very active in Malaysia at the moment, but I think there is a sort of semi-dormant one, but we certainly would fall into a slow food movement, and that really underlines the whole philosophy of Flint. You know, this braised chicken, we use kampung chicken, and of course the braised lamb shoulder, so it's slightly more Moroccan inspired, the chicken. But that's also been very, very popular.
It's interesting you should say that, because that whole, from the days of the crock pot, cooking with the crock pot, and I'm just slow cooking the whole time, and braising is a technique that's really fallen out of favor.
Yes.
So it's good to see that, at the very least, you are bringing it back.
Absolutely.
One piece of meat at a time.
Soul food.
Yes, that's soul it. Food. We should just remember that's what it should be called, soul food.
Yes.
Next up, Ian Howard's going to be talking about this other new baby, Proof, which is the wood-fired pizza at APW. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. This is BFM 89.9. You've been listening to Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. With me, my good friend and returning guest, Wong Yin Hao, proprietor of Vintry, Stoked, Flint, and we're now about to talk about his wood-fired pizza place, Proof, at APW. Now, APW is an interesting place. It's a conglomeration of few different places, few different concepts. Very interesting F&B concepts, actually. Yes. And I guess with the introduction of a pizza place, that kind of makes that whole bubble very complete, that whole picture very complete.
Yes.
How did you wind up at APW? Because to me, looking at the way things are, and when I know of you, you're quite you're already a very established entrepreneur, F&B person. And APW strikes me as a place where a lot of startups are going in.
Mm, yes.
So it's a little bit of an incongruence mix, but not necessarily an incompatible one.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, I think in F&B, it's obviously a very fast-paced world. And having been in the business for more than 10 years, that qualifies me for, I suppose, what do you call it, middle-age status. So I felt it's good to actually sort of have a reboot, in a way. It's sort of challenging myself away rather than just sticking in staying in the comfort zone. So APW was something which, you're right, it's something really, really fresh, really interesting. And I've been going there for my coffee for the last few years. That's obviously quite a good coffee purvey over there, and I've always loved the place, from day one, and I've always looked at it and thinking, wonder whether there's any chance for future projects to occur there. And I sort of missed the initial signing up phase in terms of APW, until I saw Breakfast Teas coming up and a few other places starting renovation, then I sort of got in touch with a friend of mine who's actually a wine friend of mine who's then put me in touch with Sun Wei, who's the driving force behind APW. They're cousins, part of the same family. So from there, I had a quick coffee with him, and things actually fell into place very quickly. While we were the last to sign up, I think we concluded everything in very, very quick, double quick time. So I think it was just a meeting of minds, and I think I think he could see I understood the philosophy behind
it. I don't think any other restaurateur would have stood much of a chance against you if you were bidding for that last outlet.
Well, he was fairly popular from what I heard, but yes, I was lucky enough to get it. So yeah.
So now let's talk about proof. Obviously, proofing of a pizza.
Yes.
That's why. Not the proof is in the pudding, guys, okay? But your pizza is proof for quite a while. Your pizza dough is.
Yes, for 48 hours. So that's a bit longer than, it's a lot bit more patience than some other places. But we believe in proofing it over a longer period of time, obviously for more complexity of flavors in the
dough.
Does
it really yield that much more complexity?
It makes a huge difference. We did a fairly intensive, extensive tasting of proof dough. So we did anything from a few hours to 12 hours to 24 to 48. So, and you know, it's a huge difference in texture, in flavor. So
essentially it means that when you're actually preparing your dough, you just have to make sure that you've got a rolling supply of dough that you can just proof.
Absolutely.
Timestamp proof.
So we need to prepare it. Chef needs to prepare it at least a day, 24 hours ahead to be ready for next day's service.
So how did you reach the optimal time frame of 48 hours? Surely then on that principle, maybe 56 hours might be better.
No, it can get a bit too chewy as well. So if you let it go on for too long, then it gets a bit too chewy and the flavors can get a bit too intense. So we're happy with, I would say, between 24 to 36. Also because we're using a starter mixture from the previous batches. So, you know, we've got things going now. At the beginning, we're starting fresh. You know, so we need a bit more time to tweak it. You know, so now we've got the everything going in a clockwork fashion.
You mean
so.
You don't have your starter from some fabled pizzeria in deepest, darkest Napoli?
Well, that would be a nice story, wouldn't it? Perhaps in 10 years, we can look back on this day.
True. Well, I mean, it starts somewhere.
Yes.
And eventually, your starter that came from day one at Proof will be the starter of many other, you know, successes after Proof.
That would be a nice legacy.
So. Yeah, it would be a fantastic legacy to have. Now, at one point during the 90s, I'd say, probably late 80s, early 90s and the noughties, wood-fired ovens were the birthers of, you know, there was the term that was being bandied around, oh, we've got a wood-fired oven, we've got an Italian restaurant, the wood-fired oven is a centerpiece.
Yes.
And that also has, like, braising, slowly sort of subsided a little bit with everybody clamoring to be owner of the new Yospa oven and that kind of thing. But really, the wood-fired oven is essentially the most effective vehicle for making a really, really good pizza.
Absolutely.
There's no way around it.
Yes, I fully agree with that. I mean, our oven is 100% wood-fired. So often you would come across combinations where it's gas and wood-fired. But we've opted to go down the more arduous route in terms of just purely wood-fired ovens, which takes a lot longer to start and a lot longer to get up to the temperatures we need. But the flavors you get from it is unique.
But there's definitely a very distinct brand coming through in your restaurants. You know, slow-cooked soul food and a lot of smoking involved.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
A lot of smoking, a lot of charcoal involved. And I think that's a very cohesive philosophy that you're starting to form here.
Yes.
Do you think that will be maybe a start of further, you know, brands of restaurants that have a similar kind of personality?
Yes, absolutely. I'm always looking out, and I think I've always got a very curious mind. So I would not say this would be the last of the wood-fired generation of restaurants that I'm really into at the moment. There could be potentially at least one more.
I think you already know what it's going to be, but you're not going to tell me anything, so I'm not even going to try and ask.
We're working on it. I'm working on it. So
it's a watch this space kind of thing.
Yes.
Somehow, when we're talking about the slow-cooked soul food, smoky, smoker kind of cuisine, Malaysia seems to have jumped on the bandwagon in some respects and completely just left off some others.
Mm.
You know, the slow food movement, like you said, never really made an impact here. You would think it would be something that we would actually jump onto and be very happy to be attached with, because it's something that we can relate with as a culinary culture.
Yes.
And yet, that's never really caught on. Why do you think that's so?
No, I think you probably need a driving force or mavens who would sort of lead the way, so to say, in terms of getting a collection of like-minded, you know, restaurants or entrepreneurs to jump on board. And I think probably we're lacking that at the moment. So,
well, there's you.
Perhaps I wouldn't. You know? Yes, if I come across more, I think it's worthwhile to get together and just exchange ideas. You know, I think it's not enough of that going on in the
Definitely.
In the F&B market and in KL or in Malaysia at the moment. So
there's not enough collaboration, but there's a lot of copying.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yes.
Someone says, oh, the Josh Pavan is good. Let's all do the Josh Pavan.
Yes.
Someone says the wood-fired pizza is good. Let's do that. You know, there's not true collaboration where there's, you know, hey, you know, I've seen you've done this. Let's talk about how we can create an exciting movement out of this and create something that's meaningful.
Yes.
And that will have a long-lasting impact on our consumers and our customers.
Absolutely.
And hopefully, you know, you could be that person to drive that kind of movement.
Well, I think if I've achieved a fraction of that, I think that would be a great...
Well,
great
you
legacy.
Already have achieved a fraction of that. I'm encouraging you to do more, you know?
Thank you. Well, I said that there could be one more in the pipeline. But
there could be. There will be one more in the pipeline. But in the meantime, let's talk about the menu at Proof.
Yes.
Pizzas, obviously, you know, the star of the show, unequivocally. Yes. Tell us some of the yum-worthy kind of specimens that you've got right now, and they're getting people all hot under the collar.
Well, we kept things quite focused on the menu. So we have essentially 10 pizzas for now. And we've started with that, and we're holding on to that for the last 2 months. Five are what we call classics, the more generic, the more classic pizzas you'd find in Italy, or, you know, like your quattro formaggi and your diavola. And then we've got five more, which are slightly more... I wouldn't say experimental, but we use slightly more premium ingredients, or we use ingredients which are more interesting, a little bit off the beaten track. So our number one pizza, which surprised us, was actually our Umbrian black truffle pizza, and that caught on really quickly. I knew it would be popular for some customers, but it's by far our best seller at the moment.
And what are the toppings on that pizza?
It's very simple. It's just a mixture of mixed wild mushrooms and, of course, with the Umbrian black truffle paste, which is put on top just right at the end. Just let it just melt into the cheese.
So that's the first thing you smell.
Yes. That's one that you can smell as it's even a couple of meters away from you, and everyone smells the
everyone
truffle.
Smells it and says, I'll have one of that.
I'll
thank
have
you
one
very
of that.
Much.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, and the other one actually is one that a pizza that I held very close to my heart in terms of wanting to make it happen, because I go to Italy every year for the wine show. And there's always a small little sort of food show which comes along with it. And I fell in love with this really spicy Calabrian salami, which is called Nduja. And it's made from a lot of chilies and paprika. And it's eaten only in that southern part of Italy. And it's, for me, I thought that seared into my mind that this would make a fantastic key ingredient for a pizza. So we put it onto the menu. It's called Spicy Calabrian Pizza. Nothing too fancy. And it's caught on very well. Initially, everyone's a bit wary, like, oh, what's that? But once you try it, it's typical Malaysian style. We have a spicy palate, so
it's spicy, it's meaty. What's not to like?
Exactly.
Malaysians will be like, that's me, pick me.
So that's the other one that's really popular. And the other one that I would probably say is a must try would be our hearty carne pizza. We really use all the Italian meats, you know, so we believe in using only Italian meats in all our deli meats, in all our pizza. So it's authentic and it's very, very flavorful.
In general, where pizzerias in Malaysia are concerned, it tends to be very follow the formula, you know, the kind of sausages you'll see, the kind of cheeses you'll see, even the toppings you see. There's not much veering away from that whole well-trodden meal of ubiquitous ingredients.
Yes.
What are some of the ingredients that you think you're bringing to the table that people are going to go, wow, that's pretty good. I didn't think of that, but that really works.
One that we're going to work with soon is, for instance, wild boar salami. And that's quite popular in certain parts of Italy, like Tuscany. And I've had it before over there as well. So that's something which is quite unique as well. I mean, wild boar salami is not something you come across as an ingredient in a pizza, but it's got a lot of rich flavors, really intense, and I think it'll go really well. So we're working on that, for example, as one of the new pizzas.
So apart from your 10 pizzas,
yes,
that's all you have on the menu.
That's all we have for now. We will introduce 3 handmade pastas in probably sometime in April, and also probably 2 salads. So we're going to keep it very simple. The menu will only ever be, you know, 2 salads, 3 pastas, 10 to 12 pizzas, 1 or 2 desserts, and that's it. We're going to keep
it rotating.
Do a few
things, but do it really, really well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That's really exciting. Actually, I think KL is so overdue for a good pizzeria. No offense to the people who own pizzerias right now, but there is such, again, the whole tendency is just do what everybody does. Follow that path. It's easy, you know? So it's very exciting to see someone like you. And I know you're not afraid to break out of the mold and push the envelope a little bit. So it's really exciting to see that you're doing this and taking this on and taking on this challenge, because we really, really need a good place, a good Italian eatery that's not afraid to push the boundaries a little bit.
Yes.
So that's the challenge. I'm throwing down the gauntlet, you know. I expect to see good things coming from Proof.
Come and try our pastas next month as well.
Yeah. I will be there. I will be there sooner than you can say boo. But first up, you mentioned that you would give us a few tips for some home bakers or some home cooks to create the perfect pizza base.
Yes, yes.
Fire away.
Well, the thing about making a good pizza base is patience, as we've spoken about before. So I would recommend anything from 12 hours to 24 hours. I mean, you don't need to push it up to 48 at home. If you have the patience, why not? I think I noticed Malaysians generally do not like our pizza bases too chewy. I think overseas it's a bit more common. So if you tend to veer towards the direction, then just proof it for 6 to 12 hours. If you don't mind a bit of chew, a bit more earthy sourdough flavors coming out, then you can push it to 24 hours and 36 hours.
But it's also important when you're proofing your dough, especially in Malaysia where it's so hot and wet and sticky,
yes,
to keep it in a cool, dry place.
Yes, in a cool, dry place, but you don't want it to be too cool either. An aircon room does slow down the whole process, proofing process. So if you're in a hurry, then proof it in a slightly warmer environment. If you have all the time in the world, then you can take your time and let it go for 24, 36 hours in a cooler room.
So when you say cooler room, do you mean a room in a house that's not necessarily air conditioned,
yes,
just fan or...
Yes, just fan, or it's not exposed to direct sunlight, then that's probably okay. You know, if you want to have it go faster, then you put it in parts of the kitchen, for instance, which is warmer, and then the whole proofing process, the yeast gets more active.
Yeah, obviously, accelerates
it. Accelerates with temperature rises. So those are that's for you to play around with.
So a good rule of thumb would be to start with something like 8 hours.
Yeah.
See how you like it.
Yes.
If you're fine with that and you don't like too complex, too chewy doughs, then run with that as a yardstick.
Yes.
But if you like to push it and see how your taste buds, your palate can engage and immerse themselves in a more complex dough,
yes,
then try more time when you're doing the proofing.
Mm, absolutely.
And the cooler it is, the slower it is.
The
hotter it is, the faster it is.
Yes.
So that's the rule of thumb.
Yes.
What are some other tips that you have?
The type of flour that you use. We use Caputo 00 flour, which is one of the benchmark flours, which is used in many of the top pizzerias in Italy. So we use that as the major component of our dough. And if you feel like splurging a little bit, that's really the one you should play with, you know, if you can find it. I think you can find it in some specialist wholesalers. Retailers, I'm not sure, but wholesalers, certain specialist ones would carry that. So that's for the Rolls Royce of the flour world.
Or any 00 flour, really?
Yes, or any 00
for,
flour.
For pastas and pizzas?
Absolutely, absolutely. But okay. Caputo is the benchmark.
Yes, yes, the Rolls Royce.
The Rolls Royce.
Yes, yes. Any other tips that we should remember?
Well, the heat of the oven. So you really need to be putting into a really hot oven. For instance, obviously, we had the benefit of the wood-fired oven from Italy, and we hit 350, you know, 380 degrees Celsius, and it cooks within... A good pizza should cook within a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. If it's in there for 10 minutes, then something is going really wrong.
Or your oven's just not hot enough.
Exactly.
Now, home oven doesn't typically go up to 350.
You'll be okay with between about 250 to 280. You can get a pretty good... I mean, the key thing is to look out for something called leopard spots. If you're getting leopard spots, then you know you're getting good heat,
yes,
in the oven. So
the very desirable leopard spots,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, the holy grail.
Once you see the little black spots appear, you're like, yes, it's hot enough.
That's the way.
So
to go.
In a home cooked oven, where you were working at about 280 on as a sort of optimum heat, you're looking to cook it at about
probably about
50.
Well, maybe if you could, ideally, I would say about 5 to 7 minutes.
5 to 7 minutes.
Thereabouts, you know, that would be really great if you can.
Apart from the leopard spots, is there any visual trick that you can use or a hack that you can use to see from outside that your pizza is pretty much there?
Well, I think it's also obviously the colour of the dough or the pizza base. If it starts to brown very quickly, then you know that you're reaching the point when it's getting really hard. Yeah. So that colour is something you can't avoid. I mean, if you're getting brown, if it's too quick and it's brown on the outside and inside might be a little bit undercooked, then that's a bit tricky as well. So it's really about moving the pizza if you can. I mean, if you come to Proof, then you'll see that my chefs, they really do manipulate the pizza to sort of move it out, move it into the hotter spots, move it out when you think it's a bit over, when it's starting to cook very quickly, you bring it out.
So don't be afraid to actually move it to give it a better position, yes, in terms of the heat.
Don't just leave it in the oven and look at it because it doesn't always work.
Right. Okay, so don't be afraid to move it.
Yes.
And don't be afraid to use visual aids to see that, or even smell. You know, use your common sense. If it looks like it's starting to burn on one side, move it.
Yes.
Get it ready.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Inhao. So if anybody would like to try, and I suggest they do very strongly, Flint is located at
24 Pasiran Ampang,
and Proof is
located at APW, which is
29 Jalan Riong, behind New Straits Times in Bangsa. Yes. Thank you so much. Good to have you here again.
Thank you.
And we'll be seeing you at the restaurant soon.
See you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Yinhao for joining us on the show. If you'd like to find out what we are giving away this week from Flint and Proof, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time. Alternately, you can follow Faye on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Koo, that's MISSKHOO, for more tidbits about the show. Till next Saturday, have a delicious week ahead. My name is Off Newting. You've been listening to Feeding Time on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.